Now, here's Eric.
And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Dennis.
And we have on the line our friend Wes Bryan from ACI Learning. Are you there, Wes?
I am. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, sir. Good to talk with you. We like bringing Wes on because he's training people on tech every day and learning more and more, more than we are learning, probably. every day. And he's got insights into what's going on. And we thought maybe we had this whole model collapse talk about AI. And we were wondering if you had any opinions or had any insights you might share with the audience about this potential issue with AI that we should all be kind of aware of.
It is very interesting, you know, when we talk about AI model collapse, you know, because we're so reliant. Well, I can't say we're so, that's an absolute statement, but we're getting more and more reliant on AI, large language models. And, you know, when we talk about AI model collapse, you know, what does it actually mean for us? Well, it essentially is, you know, this irreversible degradation of the model over time. And it can cause a lot of things, like, for instance, you know, the generation of the output, you know, the data that we want back is factually wrong, which is worst case, a gibberish or just nonsense. If you've ever seen some of those AI generated images where it's an elephant, but it's got three trunks, right? you know, that can be a problem if that becomes the norm and that becomes its output. So we do have to have things like checks and balances. You know, I'm sure you've had plenty of security people on that talk about something as simple as keeping your data sanitized in a database through things like, you know, data validation, you know, input validation, you know, and these checks and balances. It's very important, especially as we, as a society, gravitate towards more and more reliance on these AI models.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and the thing is, though, Wes, I mean, that's the thing that scares me about it, is that AI didn't think of this. The folks that generated this AI concept didn't think about this before they released it. And it just feels so dot-com bubbly to me that it's like, okay, you guys didn't think about it. Now we got to watermark or pixelize or make sure that the output you're putting is not being reconsumed by somebody else's AI. And it just seems stupid, right? You have artificial intelligence designed by humans that wasn't smart enough to realize you shouldn't use artificial intelligent output more than once. Doesn't that beg the question of what the heck are we doing?
Absolutely, yeah. That's a great point. You know, if people aren't aware, maybe you'll see some brilliant minds out there that talk about the checks and balances. It goes back to that garbage in, garbage out. You know,
yes.
What you put in is going to be what you get out. And there's so many different varieties of what could cause, you know, or what could be considered garbage. You know, you look at things like the limited scope of the data sets. In large language models. And what I mean by that is that, you know, this concept of tail data or long tail data points versus head data points, you know, fancy term for, you know, a tail data point is, you know, that the AI models, you know, they struggle with things like rare events or infrequent data points, and it becomes
right.
Very, very hard to learn. So those things might, you know, the output performance isn't good versus things like head data points, which are the frequent and common data points. And AI performs well with this, but the problem with it also leads to things like overgeneralizations.
Right.
As well. Or let's take the concept of, you know, outside of the view of the data. You know, if it doesn't exist in the data, then it doesn't exist at all. And that's a problem. You mentioned, AI not being trained on AI. You know, we talk
right.
about recursive data sets, right? That leads to things called feedback loops, right?
Right.
Well, it is this because AI said it was this, and it just rapidly exacerbates the entire model itself. You know, when we look at the, you know, the major data types, right, we have synthetic data and we have natural data, right? The difference between, you know, if, you know, an author writes a novel, that's human data, versus if I have AI write that novel, that's synthetic data. And synthetic data is used, it's artificially created data, but it's trying to simulate real-world data. And kind of like you were saying, that the intention initially, did you think about that? So let me give you an example, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we need to predict finances, right? And we need to know what the, forecast the future. Well, I'm not necessarily going to be able to go to a CFO of a company and say, hey, I need your financials in order to help you do this, right? That's private information. That's not going to happen. So what do? We try to simulate the real world data to potentially come with an output. And that could, it could skew the results. You look at another couple of points, bias versus partial data. Mm-hmm. Really what they boil down to is incomplete information, right? When I say bias, I'm not saying that you're focused on a bias, but it's incomplete information, right? Bias data that doesn't include every angle, viewpoint, group, or concept within it. Again, if it doesn't exist in the data, it doesn't exist, period, in the output.
Right.
Things like partial or incomplete information, it doesn't contain all the necessary information. And then that comes back to that existential question, who defines what necessary is? We always say, well, the average is between the norms. Well, who defines the norms?
Well, and do you really want to get information that's just based on the average? That doesn't seem like you're going to get good information. What's his name? Buffett there would dump half of the Apple stock the way he did at the timing that he did, right? That's if you had the AI model that could have predicted Buffett would do that, then you would not have seen a 1,000-point drop. So, asking for the average just seems like, again, we're going to harm our output as a human race, not improve it. Average is typically not what we want. You want excellence, right? I know some political approaches like communism and socialism bring you to the lower averages. So I guess if that's what you want, but your data has to be more nuanced. You have to have all the data. And this just strikes me as such an amazing, I was just so shocked to hear that, Captain Kirk's always beaten the computer by just putting it in a recursive loop by just asking it a question that it can't understand. And this is like, have we watched enough Enterprise and Captain Kirk to understand we shouldn't have done this with AI already? How does,
I go back to Hal. Right. Yeah. I'm sorry, Eric, I cannot do that.
Right.
It's interesting because if you look at for instance, when we say human data, right? Again, I gave an example, of a novel, but let's take somebody that's in photography and they go out and let's say they go out to the safari, right? And I'm geographically illiterate, so bear with me on this. Yeah. But they're going to take multiple pictures of those elephants that are out there. That's human generated information versus synthetic data where if you take a successive set of images, you feed in these human generated images, and then it goes through these loops where then it takes in its recursive information, and it's amazing how you can see very, very short period of time kind of stacking them up like checkers, right? How from the first iteration to the bottom iteration, it's so wildly different, right? Yeah.
An elephant becomes unrecognizable to the AI, and you've asked it to draw an elephant, but it just creates a blob.
Sure, and that just exacerbates the problem. You already have some of the things that we've already talked about. Again, the rarities, the infrequencies versus the commonalities and generalized, generalizations, right? So it's very, very important that we keep focused on that, and there are some things that we can do. I was just recently reading an article that came across my feed somewhere about MIT. They have a product that they're, or a technology that they're putting out, and I understand it at a very high level, but basically what it is, it's called Thermometer, mm-hmm. and it's an auxiliary overlay over the LLM, or sorry for the acronym, large language models. And what it does is it keeps it in check in real time. This might not seem like, it seems like a good thing, but one of the struggles are if you're constantly checking something, right, it's going to cause this just massive amount of power draw and the consumption that we need to keep this model in check. And then mm-hmm. that's going to degrade the performance too. So it's that fine balance, and I don't know where it is. So I thought that was a very interesting thing, that it was an overlay that they can do, that they can basically put checks and balances in place in real time without degrading the performance of the model. And I think that we're going to see, not only do we need, but I think we're going to see more of this coming up. There's other things that we can do too when it comes to protections. So for instance, three that comes to mind, right? So we talk diverse and high quality data.
Right.
Right. Now, again, like you've already mentioned, high quality information is super important. But again, we also have to define, like I said, with those averages, what do we consider ahead of time what high quality information is?
That's true.
And that
a lot of the experts aren't that high quality.
Yes, you said it for sure. You know, this can help to ensure things like that the model is going to be, trained on a broad amount of truly accurate representative information, right? Mm-hmm. And that can help to stifle or at least slow down, biases or overgeneralizations that, listen, we can get so generalized that it almost becomes no point in reading it, right?
Right.
Or whatever the information is. The other thing is kind of like MIT's talking about, you know, a real-time regular model evaluation, and whether that's a technology that's overlaid, it's peripheral to it, whether it's kind of like a guardrail behind it, you know, I know you all have probably talked about this for years, right? You talk about in your security, there's never a one-size-fits-all solution, and mm-hmm. you better be continuously testing.
Right.
Well, we need to be doing that to the models, right? But we also need to be doing it continually testing the models, not just on the generated output, but, hey, if we throw unseen new information at it, how does it react so that we can identify and then we correct those issues before they become significant and trying to protect them before they even get out into the public or the wild, but making sure that we can keep those in check before any of those become significant. And then one of the final things I would say is that we've kind of already touched base on it is the over-reliance on synthetic data.
Right.
Right. And again, that's synthetic. Again, it doesn't mean necessarily fake, but we're trying to recreate this artificial information. We need to make sure that we do this very, very carefully. And we want to make sure that an AI model isn't trained on its own data, because that's that recursion that happens. And that ultimately comes back to those feedback loops. You know,
right.
I said it is this because I said it is this because, again,
yes.
I said it is this.
Is this.
You know.
And so maybe, Wes, we're going to finally see, instead of us always being the commodity in this equation where the internet has made us the economy, everything's free and you're the actual commodity that they're reselling. Now, all of a sudden, it's your brain power that the AI needs in order to not be so stupid. How mm-hmm. ironic is that? I mean, if you're an AI that has access to lots of fresh content, your AI is going to be less likely to collapse than the next guy's AI. So wouldn't it be interesting if there's a way now to monetize your output where they're scraping the internet for free, but maybe we could actually work out a way where we can actually charge the AI company. Hey, you want fresh data? You want to read my Google emails? You want to read my Word documents in Microsoft 365? Well, maybe you should pay me.
Put a little cash in my pocket.
By the megabyte or whatever, right? When we figured it out with MP3s for artists that write music, why not figure it out to train AI? Because that's where the key is here. From what I've read about these collapses, it's really the model that has the access to the most fresh content. They're going to hoard it. They're going to not allow other AIs access to that content. So their data always is generated by, you know, humans, which is utterly ironic, I know, but that's the only way to keep the AI model from collapsing on itself. It's just really a mess. The more you think about it, it's just a mess. It's like we're way so far away from this AI becoming. And we had a caller asking if we thought AI was going to be as revolutionary as a steam engine or the Industrial Revolution. And to me, it feels dot-com-y bubble, like the whole dot-com bubble thing that happened back in 2000. That's what AI feels
sure.
like right now to me. That if we haven't thought about these problems already, I mean, the internet had not thought about. The internet was just configured and it worked. It just had to spread out. AI, if mm-hmm. they haven't thought about these problems, is it really going to be revolutionary? To I don't know. Maybe
sure.
we got a problem here.
Or is it going to revolutionize demise?
Right.
and quickly too, because it's interesting how. Because let's face it, I use AI for me, but you know, some of the things that I use it for is things like, I have to write, like certain notes, I have to write them in different formats. I use Markdown and stuff. And it's nice to be able to take my notes and say, okay, take these notes and convert them. And I can do it just in seconds. Right.
Yeah.
But there becomes a problem though, if you're putting out information from AI that is training the next generation. Current generation, whatever generation, you know, and successive generations on information that was based on its own, what it considers factual,
right.
Without putting that in check. Right. A little in truth, no matter how many times you tell it, it's still a lie.
Mm-hmm.
But when the lie gets accepted as fact, then we're really, really in a bad shape. And we've really got to be cautious on that.
And that's the key that you kind of talked about. You know, people talk about using AI, right? I mean, even the new president of Aetna talks about trying to leverage AI to try to, you know, improve the fact that they got to come up with a couple billion dollars in savings, right? What are you going to do? You know, you're not going to have AI replace 1,000 people to do their jobs. You know, it can do things like you described, transcribe things. It can do some really basic, mundane things. It's not going to do $2 billion worth of things. And so that whole AI moniker becomes, again, it just feels like .com bubble. You know, we're going to fix it with AI. Okay, you go.
Yeah, and it's that rush to monetize it.
Yeah.
You touched on that. It's that rush to monetize this type of platform,
right?
But when one person or one entity holds all the information and doesn't share it with others, can we really trust that information?
Right.
And again, I'm not taking the tinfoil hat and putting it on here, but these are questions that need to be asked.
Yeah. No, you know, we all have our tinfoil hats on, but it's not even that. I mean, you can look at the direction it's going. So do you guys, with what you do in training, do you guys do any training on any AI technologies like ChatGPT? Do you do any courses so folks can get better understanding what these things can do?
Not at this point. We're really analyzing, again, because like you mentioned, it's such a volatile market right now.
Yeah.
It really needs to, what is the benefit in doing that, and what are the outcomes that the learner takes away from it? And we, you know, the training really has to be more so about what are those learner outcomes. So we're evaluating it, and it's yet to be seen in 2025. But as of right now, we don't have anything. In fact, if you... being a, you know, MCT and stuff, former, you know, MCT and stuff, you can get access, Microsoft Certified Trainer, you can get access to some of their information and content and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen where they are doing from a design perspective within the cloud or the fundamentals. But past that, it's yet to be seen. I know that it's definitely in some of the vendor training. It's most certainly on their radar, and
yeah,
including it in different areas of IT as well.
Anything about Copilot you guys are working on yet? Microsoft's product?
No. Nothing right now. And again, it's all yet to be seen. You know, we focus on things like some of the more like enterprise desktop administration.
Yeah.
Deploying the clients, supporting the clients, and stuff like that. Working with server and a variety of the cloud based technologies, and from a security standpoint.
Sounds good. Now, we have a link over there to Wes's company. Well, you don't own the company, but you're a edutainer over there.
Edutainer, yeah.
And I've taken a lot of Wes's classes and learned a lot from using them. You can subscribe to the ACI Learning. You've done some stuff with it too, Dennis.
Oh,
right?
Definitely.
They used to be IT Pro TV. I still think that's a better name for you guys.
I got it in the background. It stays on my mic.
Yeah. But you guys, if you want to become a geek, you want to learn more about technology, places like ACI Learning is a great way to do it. And they just break it down into more simple terms. You can rewatch the actual courses. They'll actually bring up some of the technologies in front of you so you can actually see what they're doing. The security stuff is great too, because they'll show you where they're messing around with the whatever they're talking about as far as the security aspect that they're covering. So it's a great tool. And AI is not replacing you guys, just based on what we talked about.
Sure, I hope so. Fingers crossed. No, there's going to have to be a human behind the wheel. You mentioned that, so
yeah.
I don't see it likely happening. But again, I think I've said before on the show, I don't want to be that person that says we'll never need anything more than 64K of RAM.
Yeah, and we'll never get past 9600 baud.
No, oh my God, yes.
Remember those limitations? We blasted through those. No, well,
yeah.
And that's the thing in IT, right? We don't know either, right? We would love to be able to predict it and buy the next stock that's going to, you know, we're not Nancy Pelosi. We don't know what's going on. So we can't buy that next stock and get forward. And it would be nice to know that AI actually has that potential right now. If I went and bought NVIDIA, I'm going to be a bazillionaire in 10 years. But I don't know, you know?
Sure.
You guys getting into Bitcoin or blockchain? You guys talk about that at all?
No, again, just because it's such a volatile market and it changes so much and so rapidly, again, it's based on some of the more of the concepts around helping people that are in IT, not necessarily some of those niche markets.
Yeah.
And I say niche, and I just mean niche from a training perspective. You know, it's front and center and has been for 5 years or longer now, you know. But again, it's really what is the total benefit to our learners and the outcomes for our learners and what will make them the most successful.
You're probably good to stay away from it, but it would be nice to actually have a trusted resource of training to actually explain blockchain to people so that they wouldn't go invest in blockchain iced tea and realize that that's not going to actually make you any money. Anything else you want to talk about with the AI, Wes?
Well, just again, checks and balances, kind of like we've talked about, you know. And if you want an interesting read, I would there's MIT's got some articles, news articles up on their website. You know, check out Thermometer. I think it kind of gives you an idea for those that are maybe a little bit concerned and you know, maybe think that AI isn't being put in check. We do have some brilliant minds out there, massively more talented than I am. That are thinking on what we can do and the things that we need to invent to help keep this in check.
Yeah, no, that's true. And I think that's all going to happen. And we'll put the link up there on computertalkwithtad.com. We'll put a link up to ACI Learning as well. And if you want to find Wes and all of his courses with his friends out there, they've got a huge catalog. And if you want to become a geek, again, we have Wes on because we want you guys to understand that there's resources out there. You can become a geek. You can, you know, Wes, you've always talked about your past as being, you know, you go back to, you know, flipping burgers way back when, right? You've talked about that
Absolutely.
On our program. And it's changed your life by going ahead and through, you know, getting training. And it's available to you guys. We need more geeks in this field. We need more cybersecurity people. We need more people who understand networking. And when I say DHCP, your hair shouldn't hurt. It should be like, oh, yeah, I know what that means. You know, we need to understand. We need more people to understand where the switches are so they can flip them correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of potential and there's lots of opportunity in IT. And if you're worried about AI taking your job, I just, based on what we're seeing, I would have thought about that a little more 6 months ago. But these model collapsings give me complete pause as like, oh my gosh, before you know it, it's just going to be oatmeal and useless.
Well, you know, I thought about that, you know, and I think people that have been in IT for a while have thought that too. Well, I don't really need to know what, you know, a server hardware is anymore, right? Because I could spin up a virtual machine. Well, that still resides somewhere in a server closet that's connected with physical cabling. Or we're getting, you know, people, oh, well, with the cloud now, we're not going to need technicians. No, that is furthest from the truth. If anything, you're going to need more technicians because of the fact that when things go wrong in the cloud, you need to know who you can talk to get these things back up and running under your own control.
Think about Delta. You know? They had 40,000 servers they had to touch after the CrowdStrike update. 40,000.
Yeah.
That was done by humans who had to reboot those suckers.
Yeah, and unless you have ILO boards, I mean, you're physically in front of all of those nodes, and that right there alone should tell people, hey, you still need people sometimes to push the power button. Oversimplification, but to know why you're pushing the power button and what's going on inside of the physical machine, whatever the endpoint might be, whether it's a server, whether it's a mobile phone, a workstation, a laptop, name your operating system, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, it doesn't just exist in electrical limbo out there. It's physical, tangible objects. And we need to make sure that people realize that they can still get trained on these things, and these are valuable and important skills.
Yep. We're coming against the heartbreak here, Wes. We want to thank you for joining us on this Saturday morning. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you, guys.
You're right.
Thank you, Wes.
See you later. We'll be right back.
Computer Talk with Tab is powered by GoNet Speed, bringing you lightning-fast fiber internet. Visit GoNetSpeed.com for pricing and availability.
All right, we are back. I always love checking in with Wes Bryan.
Oh, yeah.
We put his links up there for you guys to get more information.
And his trainings really are very, very good.
Yeah, he's amazing. I mean,
he's one of their better edutainers.
So check it out. And we're here till 11, so feel free to get online. Four lines open for you. 860-522-9842 is the number. And we'll do our best to help you out with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. And as we wait for your calls, we do have some more tech news you can use, or just tech news in general.
Tech news about the the what we've been talking about for a couple of weeks now, the CrowdStrike failure.
Yeah.
It turns out that, you know, we've heard Delta's response to all the trouble that they had as an airline.
Right.
They're going to sue 40,000 servers, and they're going to sue Microsoft and CrowdStrike. And,
$500 million.
And they're going to rethink Microsoft now.
Right, right.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Microsoft had a little bit to say about that.
They did.
Oh, they did. They threw a burn at Delta. First of all, they said that they had reached out to Delta to see if they could help.
Mm-hmm.
And right on the day of the crash.
Yep.
And a Delta employee replied to them saying, "All good."
Yeah, they weren't happy to be talking to Microsoft.
They weren't, yeah. Apparently, they didn't want anything to do with Microsoft on that at that moment. And let's be honest, who can blame them?
Right.
But at some point, you have to back off and say, I need help.
Yeah.
Let's take whatever I can get.
But now, what was Microsoft's point?
Well, their point was that their IT systems were actually IBM systems that were not using Windows or Azure.
So they're saying something different than Delta is saying.
You're
not using Microsoft, you're using something else. That does seem a little...
Yeah, I'm not quite sure where they're going with that.
Yeah.
However, they also point out a lot of defects, other kinds of defects in Delta's infrastructure.
Obviously.
That made this a lot worse for them than it did for other airlines and other kinds of companies.
Right, yeah.
I mean, there's a reason we're talking about Delta.
It is, there
okay?
is.
Okay. We're not talking about all of the airlines.
No.
We're not talking about all the oil companies, all the whatever firm we're
payment
talking
companies,
about.
The banks that
we're talking about one specific company that had a really, really hard time beyond any other company getting over this issue. So definitely something was wrong there.
Yeah.
And I think it probably went beyond just their technological platform.
Right.
It was how the business was being run.
Correct.
And what they were doing with what they had, not just what they had.
If you're down for that long, you clearly had no disaster recovery plan for when 40,000 Windows servers go down. And, you know, if you're Microsoft, you would think they'd be like, hey, you know, you didn't have a plan for Microsoft servers going down? I mean, if you listen to this program, you should. And that's the thing about this is that, you know, Microsoft's got a point. You're running our stuff. You really should have had a better job of disaster recovery planning because we could have updated the servers and brought you down too.
Well, I was going to say, you know how we are, guys.
Yeah.
You gotta work around us, right?
Exactly. So they need more geeks on the board, and these big companies do not have enough IT people on these boards asking the correct questions. They seem to have chief technology officers. They seem to have all these reviews that they do. But clearly, nobody's asking the question, what happens if all of it goes down? And in an airline, of all the things, they're all about backup systems.
Oh, definitely.
How do you forget this stuff? So, yeah, good luck to the battle is going to be fun to watch, actually, as the attorneys battle with each other. And we'll see who writes a check for who, but... It'll be fun to watch. And it's a learning experience, guys, right? This is what happens when you don't plan properly for your systems. Let's go to Jeff in South Carolina.
Oh, Jeff.
Jeff, how are you?
Oh, all right. And you, how you guys doing?
Doing good. What can we do for you, sir?
Yeah, I got a hypothetical question.
All right.
A hypothetical situation. If you have someone that's have a website that posting stuff for the neighborhood that was in good standing.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look on the website they got on there, you know, Happy Dog Day, Happy Donut Day, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then they are, they basically no longer affiliated with the organization, but you see they still have that website. And what I'm thinking is that they have somebody that they pay to create that website so it can pull up all those different different things like Happy Donut Day and Happy Dog Day and stuff like that, and also at the same time be able to add content to that website.
You're right. There's always an owner or a registrar. Or there's a registrar, and then there's a registrant. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The registrar is going to authorize the registrant access to the domain that they created. Mm-hmm. So if they go on and they, let's say they created, you know, jeffsneighborhood.com, they own jeffsneighborhood.com and they can keep posting or not posting as long as they want. And they could also sell the domain to you if you want to take control over that domain. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing you can do. You can't arrest control. You can't take control away from something that is owned by somebody else. So you kind of have to ask them nicely. We see this often in churches and in towns. So we see church, you know, well-meaning parishioners within their church create a website for the church. Something goes wrong with some disc, you know, somebody's not happy with somebody in the congregation, and that person leaves and they take their website with them. And this is where you got to be careful as an organization, is that you want the organization to own, you want the organization to be the registrant, not some third party.
Right.
And is that what's going on with you?
Yeah, that's exactly what's going on.
Yeah, so unfortunately, you either have to ask the person nicely, can you take over the domain? And they might just give it to you because they don't care. Or they might sell it to you, but there's nothing you can tell the registrar, which would be like a GoDaddy or a one of those registrars that are out there, to tell them that they're going to make them give it to you, because they don't have to.
Right, because it belongs to whoever bought the whoever's paying for it, because it has to be paid for probably yearly or however it's set up.
Yeah, you pay for a domain for a certain number of years, typically.
Yeah.
It'll be anywhere between, 1 and 10 years, give or take?
And there's even, some another bad news on this, Jeff. Like, we've seen towns who have paid their IT consultant, they paid him a fee to register their domain for them as a consultant, but he registered it as if he owned it. Then when they fired him, he took his website with them.
Right.
So they couldn't use the town's domain anymore. They sued him. The judge found in favor of him. And then he countersued them for vexatious lawsuits, and they won there too.
Wow.
Yeah. So when your IT guy does that to you, that's another pretty unscrupulous person to actually do that. But you got to pay attention to who you're paying, because for some reason, some of these people think that even though you paid them to do it as a service, they still think they own it, because that's a way to make it sticky. So you want the organization to be the owner, not some third party.
And then also, when you get somebody like that to set up a website for, say, like a HOA or something,
yep,
you want to be in the contract that, hey, this belongs to this HOA and not you just because you're doing the work.
Exactly. You know, you want the president of the HOA to be the one that is assigned as the registrant of the domain name, and you want to change that as those offices change. Otherwise, that person is long gone and, you know, stops paying for the domain name, and then somehow it gets taken over and you're paying somebody in Uzbekistan for your HOA domain.
Yeah, okay. That's what's happening with us, HOA.
Yep.
Wow. Okay, that's what I thought. I was trying to explain to some of the other board members that, you know, the technical part of it, you know.
Yep.
Something that we can do if you had that set in place. So let me ask you this last question. Like, you know, you have a National Donut Day, National Kiss Your Dog in the Mouth Day, or whatever.
Yep.
How do they extract all this information to, you know, constantly post on a daily basis or whatever, you know, to pull this information and post it on that website?
Yeah, you can do scheduled posts depending on the website, and you can actually pay for or have access to content like that will feed your website automatically for you. It'll make it look like you're doing something.
Right.
And that's available through third-party subscriptions as well. And I'm not sure about National Kiss Your Dog on the Mouth Day, but.
Yeah, that'd be something new, you know.
Yeah, that'd be different.
I couldn't think of a new joke, so I had to make that one up.
All right, that's fair. That's fair. I can't get your jokes anyways.
I know. Too technical, man.
Yeah, I guess so. So I hope that helps you, sir.
Yeah, it did. It really did. Thank you. And y'all have a good day.
You too, sir.
All right.
Jeff in South Carolina checking in. Always fun to chat with Jeff, but it is a big issue when it comes to these domains.
Definitely.
We see it pretty often, unfortunately.
And if you're ever hiring somebody to create a website for you or whatever it is, make sure it's in writing that you own the domain.
Right.
And keep in mind that any ethical, you know, web developer or consultant that you use is, like I said, if they're ethical, they're going to be willing to do that for you because they understand that that's how the business works.
Right. They'll be happy to hand over your domain.
Yeah, they'll even give you the credentials to whatever accounts you need to manage that.
This guy was not ethical. And I couldn't believe his attorney for even taking the case. I mean, it was just so creepy. So the whole town had to change his domain. And this guy kept it, you know, sour grapes, took his marbles and left. You know, you don't want to work with me? Well, I'm going to leave. And their email has to go down, right? Because the domain goes away.
Right. Yeah.
It's just ugly. All right. Let's go to Joe in Berlin next. What's happening, Joe?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
I've got an issue with trying to, bear with me because I don't know how to explain this. But if I go to a website and I want to, you know, view a PDF document, it's fine. Yep. I can view it. And on the right-hand side of this screen, there's a little arrow pointing down with a folder pointing down.
Yeah.
And I can save it.
Mm-hmm.
So if I click on that to save it, it fills the screen with this, with a directory.
Yeah. But it put it in a download folder for you.
Correct. So I can save it. But before, I could shrink that screen so I can maneuver to where I want to go directly. I can't shrink that screen anymore. It gives me a, well, not quite. If I move my cursor over to the side, I can see an arrow moving left and right, but I can't adjust the size of that window.
So your window is locked. That sizing is locked.
Correct.
You can't shrink it.
Correct.
There's usually
can't expand it.
It's funny too. We're gonna get like six people out there in Radio Land that are gonna give us the shortcut keys to how to shrink your window. But you've somehow locked it in place. You should be able to hit the little bar right next to the square and shrink it down, and that doesn't work.
The little bar.
Yeah, so if you look at the top of your screen, you've got X, you've got like a little bunch of squares.
Correct.
And then you got the little bar. The little bar should bring it down.
No, that's just it. That's all gone. It's not there anymore.
All that's missing?
Yeah.
Is it probably just out of view? There's got to be some silly, I can't remember this. The Windows keys to get it unlocked. We're gonna have six people hit us on Facebook. You know, you're supposed to use the control Windows key. And we don't.
I hope so.
Yeah, it's going to be something silly. Did you find it already, Dennis?
You can hit Alt F8 to resize the window.
There you go.
Okay, hang on. Let's see. Alt, if you guys don't mind.
Oh, wait a minute.
No,
Windows Alt and then the arrow keys. So Windows Alt up and, well, Windows Alt up to make it larger,
Windows
Alt down to make it smaller.
It doesn't work.
No. So the Windows key is, it's got the little four window panes. Is that what you're hitting?
Correct.
Okay, just making sure you're hitting the right key, because we don't want you to hit the any. We don't want you to hit the any key, because there's never an any key when you need one.
No. Correct. The Windows, the Alt.
Yeah.
And then the arrow keys.
All right. That's not working. So you're not able. Well, are you sure you've got the window highlighted? Is the thing you're trying to actually actuate highlighted?
I don't have a choice.
Okay. Cool.
Okay.
It is highlighted.
What happens if you hit Alt Spacebar?
Okay, alternate baseball. Nothing.
You got a broken window system, my friend. So it's only when, so you brought the browser up, and this happens only when you bring the browser up. You can't close it. You can't do anything. It's just stuck.
But now, if I close this out.
But how are you closing it out? Are you hitting the X?
Yes.
But you said you couldn't see the X.
No, I, the only thing I can see is the X.
Oh.
Everything else is gone.
Okay, you didn't specify that. So you can see the X, but no other side. No, it's okay. You know, us geeks get specific.
Yeah, you're right.
You should see Dennis pondering over here. I can see smoke.
I should know that.
I think I asked already, what happens if you hit Alt Spacebar?
Nothing, he said.
Oh.
Somehow he's locked.
On the left-hand side, I just noticed it popped up.
All right.
On the left-hand side, it says Save Av. As move size.
There we go.
And then use the arrow keys to slide down to where it says size, and then select that and hit enter and see what it does.
It's old school in it here.
Yeah, I mean that's the built-in window management feature.
Yeah.
That's been in Windows since 3.1.
You're running
3.0, actually.
You're running Windows 10, we assume, right?
Correct.
All right. Can you select that size option, or is that hard to do?
I did, and nothing happens.
All right. So even when you select a size with the cursor.
Correct. I arrow down to size, press enter, and.
How long has it been since you updated this thing?
No, that happened at the last update. I'm religious with my updates, so
roll it back. Maybe roll back to the previous one. Dennis is still pondering. I've never seen him stuck like
this. Yeah, you might want to do a system restore and go back to
the
at least the day before, or maybe 2 days before this actually started, and we can post an article about that.
And before you do that, go into safe mode, boot the machine in safe mode, and then take it out of safe mode. You know, reboot it in regular mode. Just putting it into safe mode and taking it out of safe mode actually might fix the issue too.
Yeah, sometimes that does work. Yeah, yeah.
How do I get it into safe mode? It's been years.
You have to press the F8 key as it's booting up.
Well, it's Windows 10, so you would do it. You would do it from the start menu and reboot it, and tell it to open in safe mode.
I haven't done that myself.
Yeah, we can post an article about that too.
F8's gone.
It goes by too fast.
I would just smash it.
There's a time window where you have to hit it.
Yeah.
And the chances of you actually doing that.
Okay. But it still exists. You can still button smash the F8 and get lucky. If you're lucky. All right. I was going to say, when they get rid of that. So yeah, try those things. Getting into safe mode and getting back out doesn't solve your resizing. And Mike's been chiming in too, I think too.
He wanted you to restart the Windows Desktop Manager service.
Nah, well, we can try that.
You can try.
We're going to put a couple links up for you to try too. Joe.
Please do that, and then I'll let you guys know next week what happened.
Yeah, we'd love to hear that.
Yeah. Me too. Okay. Thank you.
All right, Joe. Good luck.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. Bye. Windows resizing not working like that is weird. Did not have those options. So somehow it had to be the update that caused the issue. I mean,
it's got something to do with how the window is programmed to open, and it's probably calling a Windows API that's not working the way it used to.
Yeah. Just like my streaming rig. It's not working the way it used to after my update. So we're here till 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online. 860-522-9842. We are streaming live over on our Facebook page, but my Stream Deck little buttons aren't working. Even though I tested it and retested it, I was sure I solved it. But no, I have not solved my... And again, all I did was update the software. So I'm thinking right now, the streaming software that I'm using is now demanding just a little bit more than my USB controller on this old machine can handle. Because this laptop was TJ's. And we ran it through COVID when Bob and I were in the hermetically sealed office studio for back in 2019, in 2020. Mm-hmm. And then he had it for years before. So it's a pretty old laptop. So we'll see what I can do to get that working so that's not causing me this ridiculous trouble. But anytime you do an update, basically your system looks different than it did before. It's a whole new premise. All the DLLs have been updated or changed. You update the operating system as well, and that changes it. So you've got the software updates that happen that changes your soup. You've got the operating system updates that change your soup. Then you've got any of the device software updates that you do, driver updates. It all is different. So the computer looks exactly the same, but it's a completely different machine every time you do an update. And that's why troubleshooting this stuff is such a big pain in the butt. Oh, we got Larry. It's always somebody. Larry in Middlefield's got an idea. Hey, Larry, what's the combination of the keys you want him to use?
Yeah, good morning, all. Larry here in Middlefield.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if he's holding the control key down and then hitting the space bar.
You're wondering if he's doing that?
Huh. Right. If he's not doing that, nothing's going to happen. You got to hold the control key down. I don't know if he knows that. Mm-hmm. And then hit the space bar.
And that'll close your window. Won't that just close your window?
I'm not sure. I never tried it. I'm just thinking if he's hitting the control and then hitting the space bar, nothing's going to happen.
Right. It's not sequential. You're right. It's always hold down the keys 1, 2, and 3 all, in order, and you got to keep them held down. You're right, Larry. So.
Well, anyways, I don't know if he's still listening, but.
Of course he is. Who would turn off the show? Come on.
Yeah, I'm listening too.
Well, thanks for checking in.
Ever since you've been on.
Really? Way back that long?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, we appreciate it.
All righty.
All right, Larry. Thanks for chiming in.
You too. Bye.
Right, bye-bye. It's always some silly. Most likely he hit a bunch of keys and could have put it into this mode if it's not a Windows update issue. Right? We've seen people do that with their function keys. They lock themselves out of the ability for the system to operate just by using keys. Even on my own machine here, if I slip, I can turn a function key on that it's really hard to turn off, and I'm all of a sudden I type something and it doesn't actually go where I want it to go. That's the whole issue with these Windows computers that we're dealing with. Everything we talked about today, though, has been posted over at computertalkwithtab.com. It's the name of the show.com, which also works. If you follow us on Facebook, and Mark Zuckerberg deems our news worthy, if you're part of the Computer Talk with Tab listener network, it's a private group, but we'll let you in. You can work with your fellow Computer Talk folks, and Dennis is very active in there as well, helping people with any questions you might have. We'll do our best to get you that information. All the stuff that we've talked about has been linked there as well. Mike G has been posting that. If you follow us on X, Elon Musk's product there over at Tab Computer Sys, everything we've linked will also get into your Twitter feed, your X feed. So plenty of ways to get our links. Of course, the live links off of Computer Talk, they show up fairly quickly after we're done with the program. So you don't have to go and try to remember what we said. We don't want you surfing and Googling, trying to find, hey, what were they talking about there? I heard something about thunderstorms or I don't know what it was called. No, we want you to go and get the right link so you're not finding yourself at some dark corner of the internet. Definitely much safer to get the information that you get that way. Anything you want to bring up there, Dennis, before we end the show here?
We might as well talk about Windows updates.
Yes.
There is a way, apparently, an exploit in the Windows update algorithms.
Oh my gosh.
That can be used by bad actors to downgrade a computer, that is to remove an update that was installed and force it to remain at that level.
Wow.
So you, ironically, this is a Windows update downgrade, if you can believe it. And it's all because when, Microsoft had to build in the ability to remove an update.
Right, because they have messed up updates all the time.
Break something, or they can just issue a bad update that they need to reissue, so they got to reinstall it.
Yep.
Well, I mean, it's all well and good that feature's in there.
But right.
There now appears to be an exploit that bad actors can use.
Wow.
to downgrade a computer. And I guess the goal that they would have would be to remove an update that plugs a security hole that they then want to use against you.
Unbelievable.
So, yeah, I mean, wow.
I think I saw that recently. That's a pretty high warning, right?
Yeah, it's actually pretty serious.
It's not patched either.
Not yet. Well, they're going to. Don't be surprised if your Windows computer updates probably before Patch Tuesday to fix that.
Right, they'll send an update.
This is something that they may issue very quickly.
Sounds good. Thanks, everybody, for joining us on this lovely Saturday morning. I want to thank Mike G for posting everything, Dennis as well. Thank you, Carolyn. And I guess we'll see you next Saturday.
And remember, we want you to be geeks, too.
Have a good one.